Welcome to the annual budget hearings for the City and County of Denver's next fiscal year. This session of the annual budget hearings begins now.
Welcome back, everyone, to our regular scheduled programming of budget briefings. So this is our final briefing of the day of the week. So some folks maybe go celebrate afterwards. Before we go into that real quick, there's some money found in the room. It was found on the windowsill. And you know, for being
can we add it to the general fund?
Yeah.
And donations. General fund. I'm with you, Sarah.
Anyone that was sitting over there, if he's budgeting $4, if not, it will be here. And maybe I'll just leave it here and maybe it'll be picked up overnight. Anyway, thank you so much, Sheriff Diggins, for joining us this afternoon. As you can tell, we've been here for a long, long day. So you get the joy of picking up the last presentation. So we'll go ahead and get started and go through your presentation, and then we will have time for questions from council members. So with that, please take it away, Sheriff Diggins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. I just want to say the Sheriff's Department would be happy to add that $4 to our budget. We'll go ahead and get started. Sorry, Councilman.
Well, that would double, wouldn't it?
No comment. First, I would like to start off by thanking the men and women of the Denver Sheriff's Department. You do a fantastic job of serving the citizens of the City and County of Denver every day. I'd like to thank the Mayor and Council for all of your support throughout the year. I'd like to thank the community for the support that they provide to the Sheriff's Department. And lastly, I want to call out Shanae Cummings. She's back there. Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Safety, as well as her team, for helping us to stay on track, and for also putting together a great presentation. I'd like to recognize the DSD members that you see sitting along here as well. That is our executive team, with the exception of Chief Gillespie, who unfortunately could not be here. The Sheriff's Department's priorities are to provide a safe and secure environment for those placed in our need, and to perform our duties in a manner that is responsive to the diverse community that we serve. We have four pillars in our strategic plan. First, to lead, listen, and take care of our staff. Ensure fairness, dignity, and humanity for those in our custody. Be responsive and respectful to the community that we serve, and to also encourage our staff to pursue professional and personal growth as well. We have, as our department priority, staffing and recruitment. We've been talking for years about recruitment, which I will delve a little more into in just a moment, but it's going very, very well. We are now focusing a lot more on retention. We want to focus on enhancement of public safety services and in maintaining a safe and secure environment for our staff and the people in custody, and also focus on the wellness of the people that we serve who are in our custody, and improve our facilities as well. We recognize and adhere to also the council priorities, along with the mayor's priorities, to strengthen the community, empower the community, and increase access to physical and mental health. This is our organizational structure. I report to Director Soldalte. We also have in our organization Sheriff Administration, Jail Operations, which is primarily the facilities, as well as Court Services, Specialized Operations and Analysis, which includes Research and Development and our Academy, and Mental Health Programs, the newest division headed by Dr. Nikki Johnson. Now, our key strategic metrics generally look towards what is the count in our facilities. As you can see by this graph, the seasonality of our count goes up during the warmer months. This is something that has happened year over year, with the exception perhaps of COVID, the COVID years. But year over year, we see a rise in the number of people that are in our custody as the season begins to get cooler, we see a drop in that population. We expect that to be the same for 2024 as well. In addressing inequities, we have put into place our language access plan in conformity with Executive Order 150. We have in the jails four top languages that we're working to convert our documents to. We also have a language line for folks that don't speak those four languages, whereby we can call someone to help them to understand the processes that they're going to. Annually, we serve about over 2,000 individuals who speak many languages, and I'll also talk about the diversity in our department, which helps us to address that as well. The crisis response team is similar to the STAR team. As you have helped us over the years, the crisis response team is the civilians who have been hired to work side by side with Denver deputy sheriffs to work in the pods to help folks that have mental health conditions to prevent crises and to also address them as well. There are approximately 18% of the people that are in our custody that have an active mental health concern, with 72% of those individuals being diagnosed with serious mental illness. In 2024, the CRT has seen approximately 4,000 individuals in custody, with an average of about 18 individuals per day. This is our proposed 2025 budget composition. We have a total base of $184 million, with the majority of that being $178 million from the general fund. For our uniform staff, we have 859 FTEs and 219 civilian FTEs. We prefer to call them professional staff. The vast majority of our budget is in personnel, which accounts for $136 million and about $48 million in services and supplies. And you see here that our budget has grown over the years. You'll see a significant jump from 2023 to 2024 and 2025. The delta has to do with collective bargaining, and those numbers were not included in those previous years, but have been added to our current year's budget. This is our change summary. We have 20 FTEs, which we're going to hold vacant for civilian positions. We have about $8 million for vacancy savings for uniform personnel. We're not having a reduction in authorized personnel, but because of that vacancy savings, we're able to project how much we're going to need for overtime dollars, which are paid out of those vacancy savings, and return that to the budget for 2025. We have an add of $239,000 for a lease agreement at the vehicle impound facility. We have Denver Health, who was asked for a $1.5 million merit and market increase. And we're also moving from the Sheriff's Regional Fund two positions, a program coordinator and diversion officer, for $192,000. And then for our academy, we're working closely with the Budget and Management Office, which is projected to have between 60 and 80 recruits. We have an add of $2.5 million. So our strategy in mitigating the impacts of the 2025 reductions was to make sure that it impacted our operation the least amount as possible. We also are preserving funds needed to supplement typical overtime expenditures. And for the 2024 TRUA, we minimize the impact of these reductions through effective management by looking at office supplies, minimizing travel, and looking at our copier leases, while also ensuring that those things did not impact our service to the community or the people that are in our custody. And with that, we are to questions. So I would like to turn it over to you, Madam President.
I mean, I think you win the award for fastest presentation, I think, this entire week. Thank you, Sheriff. Okay, people are now starting to join in. All right, so let's start with Councilwoman Torres, and then I need to get the rest in the
Worry I got in too early. Thank you. Okay, so my initial question
Sheriff. When, well, it wasn't even a question. It was just thank you for sharing your progress on the language access plan. I hadn't heard a department talk about that yet, apart from HRCP, who's working with the departments to do that. So, when I thank you for talking about that, because it is important, especially the population that you see in and out of the jail. I'm wondering if there is anything that you can just give kind of anecdotally around how that's shown up as important or different since you've established the plan.
I think it adds value when folks in our custody understand that we respect and acknowledge the language that you speak and helping you to navigate through, which is a time that is probably the most difficult that you may have ever experienced, for you to be able to read documents, to be able to understand processes in a language that is familiar to you speaks volumes. And I think it also helps folks as they navigate through the criminal justice system to be able to do that in a more robust and better way. So we're focused on not just the work that we're doing today with the four languages that we've identified, but to increasing that to the number that is mandated by Title IV and the executive order, which is 12. So we're continuing to work with the city attorney's office, with HRCP and OSCI to be able to do that.
Awesome, thank you for that. The other is just the gap between authorized and actual strength. And it's been a while. It feels like there's a plateau that we can't get over. What do you observe that to be? And is our authorized strength just too high, or do we need to get there?
We need to get there. We don't believe that it's too high. It's based on the number of positions that we have and the posts that we fill throughout all the duties that we are called to perform. That includes both of the jails, both courthouses, the LFC, city and county building, civil functions, and the like. So based on knowing what those duties are, those FTEs, if we were at full strength, we would have one deputy in each of those. However, unfortunately, since 2020, we've seen a significant decline in the number of people that want to put on a uniform. I watched Chief Thomas's presentation, and he said eloquently how it's been a challenge for him to be able to recruit. It has been the same thing for us, with the exception of 2024. We've seen a reverse by changing our testing process, and we now, instead of like in 2023 and the years before, where we had smaller academies, sometimes half a dozen people, at best 12 people, maybe 15. We're now seeing full academies. We graduated last week, 34 deputy sheriffs. We have 36 that are in the academy today. We're looking at a December academy of 50 deputies. It has been phenomenal. So the plateau has been us attempting to recruit, run academies, and outpace attrition. I believe, I'm cautiously optimistic, that we can say that we're going to begin to see an increase in that number. The hard part for us is retaining the good staff that we have now, because similar to Chief Thomas, we have a huge wave of folks that are eligible for retirement. Next month, I get my 30-year pin.
Whoa.
Yeah, and
sorry,
there were... That's because I started when I was six. That started when I did, between 1992 and 1995, we hired over 300 deputy sheriffs. History sometimes repeats itself. So what we're seeing now is a huge wave of folks that have been eligible for retirement. So we're now hiring bigger classes. We're seeing a significant wave of retirements, but once that wave dies down, if we continue with the pace of recruitment that we have now, we'll begin to see some significant gains the same way that it did when I became a deputy 30 years ago.
Question on the budget preparation for that. You're authorized for 858. You have just over 600 actual. Do you carry that vacancy so that you can fill them, or how does that work with your budget?
We carry the vacancy to pay for the backfill of overtime that's required for those posts. These are mandatory posts. There has to be somebody at the DDC, the county jail, on every single post. So we have to fill them. So that's what we use the vacancy savings for.
Do you think that's going to have a reverse reaction for folks who
have been working overtime and seeing that increased paycheck? Not seeing it anymore?
What we recognize is that many hands make for light work, lighter work. We know our deputies are tired. We know that they're working a lot of hours of overtime. We have required all deputy sheriffs and all supervisors to help out with the overtime to lighten that. But as we continue to focus on recruitment and prioritize retention, we believe as those numbers begin to subside, we'll see those numbers go down. But we're all in the same space. We recognize that our staff is doing a tremendous job and appreciate those deputy sheriffs to stay with us to help out.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Next, we have Councilwoman Parity, followed by Councilman Flynn.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. You, Sheriff. Glad to hear the good news about recruits. One curiosity that I had looking at the budget is that it looked to me like the county jail has a fall in FTE, whereas the city jail, the FTEs are remaining flat. Did I read that right? And if so, could you explain a little bit, like, what, you know, the reasons for that?
I had a conversation with the Budget and Management Office and would ask for Steve Vaughn to help out to explain those numbers.
Yeah, so every year, I'm sorry, Steve Vaughn, Budget and Management, every year we have a process where we move information from one application into another. We work with the safety team, the finance team, and what we have discovered is that there was some movement within positions moving in and out that we did not correct in time for this budget book. We're gonna correct those for the October edition, but there is no real change in those facilities, no change in authorized strength or anything like that, but we will correct that for the October book.
Thank you, I guess that does explain it. I'm curious about a set of related questions, I guess. Sorry, it's one question. All right, I'll ask my one question, I'll ask my other questions later. You said that 18% of those in the jail have like a known mental health issue and that a large percentage of those are serious. I thought that was interesting. Do you have a statistic on hand, and you may not, but for how many folks are experiencing drug or alcohol addiction of whoever's in the jail at a given point in time?
I don't have those in front of me. Councilwoman, we do have that information. I'd be happy to send that to you after.
Great, thank you. And I will get myself back in the queue because I have lots of questions about meth and other things, but back in.
Okay.
Thank you.
It sounds like Councilman Flynn does not have any additional questions, so we go to Council President Sample.
Thank you. And thank you, Chief. Thank you all. I just want to give your staff a shout out because you staff the City Council chambers every Monday night. And so, as Council President now and as Council Torres knows, our number one job is to keep our colleagues in the public safe. And that weighs heavy on me every Monday night. And I don't think people quite understand that that's also the responsibility of the president. And taking everyone's safety is really important. I want everyone to go home at the end of the night. And I couldn't do that without you and Major Hops. Thank you for taking time to work with me lately since I got council president. So just want to give you and all your team a shout out. If there's never been a time where I don't think any of us have ever felt unsafe walking to our cars, or they're always out in the cars. They wait for all of us to go home. One time I had to go somewhere and they texted me and they're like, "Hey, lady, your car's still in the parking lot." And I was like, "I know, I'm home, I'm waiting there." So it's details like that that assure my family, that give my family the assurance as well. So just want to say thank you. Can you provide the last 3 years of how many recruits and then how many graduated? You don't have to answer that right now, but it's not in the budget book, so I would just like to see that. And for your testing, were you're able to change your testing because you're not part of the civil service, your career service. So was it a committee who came up with that testing, or how did you come up with this new testing that is getting better results for people going into the academy?
It was myself, Director Saldalte, David Chamberlain, and our staffs who are responsible for that work, saying we see this is an area that is a challenge for us. What do we need to do in order to move to a more effective process? I'd like to give David Chamberlain and the HR team a shout out, as well as Director Saldalte, because their partnership and their teamwork's help, along with our recruitment team, Chief Gillespie and our deputy sheriffs that go out and do recruitment. They have done a fantastic job, a tremendous job in making sure that that process is not cumbersome for folks that are applying. They also walk the candidates through the applicant process, and we also implemented something which is brand new, which we refer to as the pre-hire process. So once someone makes it all the way to the end of the applicant process and we know that we can hire them, we recognize that they also are applying to other sheriff's departments or police departments. So we want to get them onboarded as soon as possible. Before they even go into the academy, we're bringing them into the Denver Sheriff's Department and giving them a job. We're letting them shadow deputy sheriffs, not in a way where they have contact with people in custody, but maybe from behind glass, or they're working in other parts of the department. And it has been tremendous in us getting folks onboarded. So I know that's a long-winded way to answer your question, Councilwoman. We were able to do that because we have the flexibility of changing our processes, which has been very good for us. Director Soldati.
Sheriff Armando Soldati, Director of Safety. I wanted to add to this, because I know this is a topic of interest to you all. One thing that, and I know you went down some things too, one thing I want to stress is with the change in test, we just didn't make it an easy test, right? That's not it. In fact, the numbers will say our failure rate for this test is higher than the NTN test that civil services do. However, the barriers to take that test, that process the sheriff just told you about, we have more people participating in the test, completing the test. Therefore, we have larger numbers getting through the pipeline. I'm sure I missed something there.
I'm David Chairman, I'm the HR Director for the Department of Safety, and just echoing what we did here. Because we're not part of civil service, we were able to evaluate our NTN test and discovered all the things that we have discussed today with the other leaders. And then, you know, we did an internal evaluation of other products. The one we went with is called SHO, which the city and county already had a contract with to do other assessments for HR. We were able to do an independent analysis with SHL. They came in, they evaluated the job. They identified key, you know, skill sets that were important for it, and then we were able to automate those in our process to enable people to have a mobile optimized testing experience, which enables people that don't have, you know, internet at home, people that don't have a laptop at home, to be able to take this test. So we did all that through the leadership of Sheriff Diggins and Armando, and we're able to roll this out in a way that lowers those barriers to entry. Like Armando said, we have now a higher failure rate. We have about 30% of people that don't pass the exam, but we went from having, you know, basically 35-40% of people just not take it. Now we have over 90% of people that get sent the assessment actually take the assessment. So more people taking it, you know, slightly more people fail it, but our numbers are much higher.
If you don't mind, I'd like to take just a moment to talk about the ethnicity of our applicants. We have 34.93% who identify as white, 29.93% who identify as Hispanic and Latino, 20.66% who identify as black or African American, and lower numbers for folks that identify other ways. We are the most diverse law enforcement agency in a 5-state region. Our staff has 38% who identify as white, 33% who identify as Hispanic, 18% who identify as black or African American, and other numbers as well. For our applicant pool, 74% are women, and 74% are men, 24% are women. For our staff, 79% are male and 20% are female. So from the perspective of gender, ethnicity, we are very proud of the diversity that the Denver Sheriff's Department.
Thank you. And one last question. Can you please get it to us in the big question on slide 12? Can you tell us what the 20 temporary role for the professional staff are positions? And you could just send that to us and repeat questions. Thank you,
Chief. Thank you, Madam Chair. Next up, we have Councilman Watson and then Councilwoman Lewis.
Thank you, Committee Chair. Thank you, Sheriff Diggins and your team. I'm starting off with a question. I'm a little suspicious.
If you are in the budget book and you get page 666, I encourage you to skip it. So you didn't, hence I have a question from page 666. I blame it on someone. So, seriousness, six unlicensed therapists were cut from, or there shows a reduction of six unlicensed therapists from the Sheriff's Department. Can you share what that, the kind of the thought, the, let me see how I'm going to phrase this. What caused that reduction of the therapists and what that impact is, and that's under your mental health and programs section.
Thank you, Councilman Watson. Yeah, I'm very familiar with that. And yeah, when Sinead told me to look at page 666 yesterday, I just
didn't skip it.
I didn't skip it. We last year were allocated a mental health intake team, which is separate and apart from our crisis response team. As a part of our proposal for budget savings, those positions had not been filled yet. So we said that we could continue to operate the CRT separate and apart and do the good work that we're doing inside of the floors of the jail, the second, third, and fourth, and fifth floor, while holding off on standing up a mental health intake team, which hadn't been filled yet. The need is still there. We'll come back another year, maybe next year, and ask for those positions to be filled.
Can you share why the need is there? I think that's where, since we're discussing budget and discussing kind of moral priorities for how we spend, can you explain why the need is there and what's missing without those six? And that's more of my curiosity, sir. I apologize for interrupting.
Oh, no, please. I appreciate the question. The need is there because while the crisis response team addresses folks who are already in custody upstairs in the jail, when folks are brought from the police department or come from some other agency and they're in crisis, or we want to know what their mental health condition is, we want to start that process as robustly as we can as soon as they come through our door. We still have a process where Denver Health does an assessment and does a referral to their team to do some additional evaluation. The mental health intake team would be our staff who could do a deeper dive with that person when they come through the door. So the need is there because folks come in crisis, and you've been through the jail. Many of council have been as well. You see those individual cells, the I cells, and you have folks that haven't had their meds in a while, who are banging on the door, who you can't cooperate or communicate with because they're not in a good space to do that. We want to begin to assess those folks as soon as possible, figure out what meds they're on, get them treatment, and then get them upstairs where they can continue on with those mental health services.
Thank you so much, sir. And I'll send that in as a question with more details necessary on that. And my final question is on page 668, what impact do you see for, and I'm reading, I could be reading this wrong because y'all have moved around funds quite a bit, the loss of 68 FTEs from the health and safety, the 68 FTEs, what's the impact do you see as far as impact to the Denver jail's inmate population, the deputies, looking at that reduction of 68 FTEs, and that's on page 668, I'm sorry.
Councilman Watson, that was the question that Steve Vaughn referred to earlier, where there were some numbers that they're going to readjust in the October print.
All right, I thought so. Thank you so much, Committee Chair.
Councilman Lewis with Pro Tem Romero Campbell up next.
Okay. I didn't see the switch.
I
just heard a different voice. I was like, what's happening? Okay. Thank you. I actually had a similar question to Councilman Watson about the decrease in personnel, but I'll actually, because you answered some of it, I'll actually go to page 670, and is that... A second, Justin. Okay. On 670, where it says personnel services, 2023-2024, 2024 is 2.1 million, and then 2025 recommended is 1.6. Is that where that's showing that loss, or is that something else happening there?
I believe that is the same reduction of those 8 mental health intake positions that the sheriff spoke to. Those are the dollar impacts of those 8 positions being.
Okay. And then can you talk a bit, Sheriff Diggins, about, so if you're seeing the decrease in dollars, can you talk about how we ensure that we maintain the needs for our community? Because you've already pointed out that we still need it. Like, what are some of the stopgap measures that you all are taking?
We still have Denver Health personnel who are conducting an assessment for every single person.
Oh, it's this. Well, you just got it.
Yes, ma'am.
You don't have to repeat that. All right, cool. Second question here. And what page is this? 664. The recidivism. So it says recidivism is defined as a new DSD booking within 1 year of the inmate's last DSD incarceration release. And I was looking at the numbers over time, and there's a, let me get to the right page. What did I just tell you, chat? 660. So the numbers at the top of that page on 664, 2021, 25%, 2022, 20%, 23, 13%, and then 2024, 15%. And then looking into 2025, it's going to sit there at 15%. I just kind of want to know what happened between, like, it continues to decrease. Is it because you changed the definition, or is something else happening that is impacting that percentage in terms of performance?
And thank you for the question, Councilwoman. It's sure. Something else. We also have the caveat of COVID that occurred between 2020 and 2023 in our jails, which folks were coming in a much higher rate. They were cycling back through the jail. So what we're seeing now is that number is beginning to flatline. And we hope that it's going to stay where it is today.
Great. Thank you. I really appreciate it. This is your official invitation, and Sheriff's as well, to the Hiawatha Davis Senior Luncheon, December 6th. Can't wait to see you there. Appreciate you. I could have sent that in an email, but I didn't. Thank you kindly.
He's putting it
back.
He's putting it away.
It's one of my favorite events of the entire year.
It really is.
Oh, okay.
You got one statement now, one question, one invite.
Next up is Council Pro Tem Romero Campbell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you again for all of the services and the protection that's provided here at the CCD. We really appreciate that. I've asked in some of our other presentations around the coordination between the Sheriff's Department, how people find out about the right-of-way, abandoned vehicles, stolen vehicles, and removal. And I'm just wondering kind of where does that fit, and are we adequately staffed, because it's one of the top calls that we get into our office.
Over the past few years, thank you for the question, ma'am. Over the past few years, there has been a significant increase in the number of calls. We have not increased the number of staff that are working that responsibility. We have had preliminary discussions about doing so. With the staffing levels that we're at right now, it could present a challenge. They work out of the vehicle impound facility, which is a part of our administration division.
Thank you for that. If I look on page 666, back to 666, there was an increase in services and supplies for a contractual increase for the lease of additional property. So no additional staff, just more property. Or what? Can you speak to that line a little bit more then?
I can. There have been a number of RVs which have been brought into the Sheriff's Department's custody, and as such, our primary lot on York was not big enough to hold them. These are, as you can imagine, vehicles with significant space needed to store them, and so we had to contract to get an additional lot to be able to store them and hold them and do other things.
Thank you. Can I do a sub to that? Just a few bullet points higher then. There was an increase in personnel, and is that from DDPHE? Is that a part-time person, or is that additive to addressing this other issue about the RV disposal?
It's a part-time position from DD.
I should say.
Yes, ma'am, they are connected. It's related to the disposal of those RVs. So we have a contract. DDPHE currently has a contract to oversee the disposal of that. We're in talks with BMO about moving that to the Sheriff's Department. So that FTE, 0.5 FTE, is a part of that oversight for the contract.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you. Okay. I have a couple questions. Or actually, Councilwoman Sawyer, do you want to go next?
That's not questions, just okay. A statement, so I can wait till the end.
Okay, great. So I have a couple questions. One around staffing ratios at the county jail. Can you talk a little bit about what those ratios are for the different buildings, for the different units?
Generally, it is 1 to 48 or 1 to 64 in a direct supervision model, meaning the deputy is actually inside of the pod with the people in custody. That is a national standard. I've been to jails, as many of you know, from border to border and coast to coast. We meet the national standard when it comes to that staffing ratio. We train our staff to be able to work in those pods and to handle that as well.
So the ratio, it's either one of those, or is it, which one is it for us? Like, for the, I guess, does it just depend on which unit or which?
Depends on the configuration of the pod. Some of them have 48 beds, some of them have 64. Some of them may have some additional beds, or they may be broken up. We have one building where there are four separate quadrants that are broken up into 12 beds each. So it just depends on the configuration of the physical plant.
Okay. Thank you for that. The second question I have is around the RISE program. And just kind of generally what you think is working, or maybe some better deployment of resources that are mentioned on page 664, what that might look like in the future. And do you see, this might be for the mayor's office, like potential collaboration with Roads to Recovery in this area?
Sure. Mayor, do you want to go first, or would you like me to?
You can start. I'll follow you, Sheriff.
Recovery in a Secure Environment program started around 2010. We went to Henrico, Virginia, and saw a very successful program that they have, whereby folks who have an addiction, sometimes a co-occurring disorder, meaning they have an addiction coupled with a mental health condition, are put into a pod and get direct treatment related to their addiction. And through the years, we have seen significant success with folks that have come through that program going back to the community better than how they have come to us. We do believe that it would work directly with the mayor's plan for Roads to Recovery, because these are the same folks that we're seeing who are out on the streets and are suffering from addiction, that are suffering from mental health conditions. And so our hope is to be able to continue to partner, to talk to Matt Ball and the mayor's office about what that partnership looks like.
Just agree. And so I think that it could be one step of that process for folks that do end up in a secure environment, the ability to have access to that high quality treatment. Serious people have been pushing on the key for what their options are when they transition, or later then have them when they leave that program be connected to housing, to work, to ongoing medicated assisted treatment if they need it, is really critical to their success. So it could be a very effective place for folks to stabilize, get clean, get treatment, get support, and then get connected to housing and work. And so we were interested in that being a part of the partnership as we expand it.
Thank you for that. Okay, and I'm just making sure, does anybody else have questions before we?
Just a relap. Relap? I wanted to get back in the queue. Thank you. I'm going to try to use words well. So I do have a question about, my understanding is that there was a House bill from 2022 that put a requirement on us that anyone who enters a custody who has an opiate or alcohol use disorder should be able to get inducted with MAP medication while in the jail. I know we're the leaders on that in the state, and deeply appreciate that. I'm just curious if our capacity has sort of kept up with that mandate, and whether we report on that regularly to the state, kind of what the oversight is there. We'd just kind of like to hear more about that, and whether you think that it's being funded sufficiently for us to meet, what we're required to do.
Thank you, Councilwoman. We are the leaders in the, not just in the state. I would put our program up against the other jail programs that I've seen across the nation when it comes to Medicaid-assisted treatment. It's one of the things that has been working very well, and I'll ask Dr. Johnson to come up to speak more to the data points that you just asked about. We certainly could use additional dollars. We do go after grant dollars. We will be going for additional personnel dollars as time goes on, but when it comes to meeting the requirements of the House bill, Dr. Johnson, I would ask you to come and answer that question.
Thank you. It's so good to see you,
Dr. Johnson.
Good afternoon. Nikki Johnson, Chief of Mental Health Services for the Denver Sheriff Department. So we did receive a federal burn grant that we've been using for the expansion of medication-assisted treatment for $1.65 million. So that has really helped us to be able to meet those bill requirements that you're speaking of. There really isn't any reporting that's required for that particular bill. However, we are able to provide anyone in our custody who needs to be inducted on or wants to be inducted on medication-assisted treatment. I don't have those numbers, but can send those along to you in terms of just seeing those increase. We have 5 new positions with Denver Health and Hospital Authority. 3 of those are nursing positions, so really helping to increase the efficiency of dosing for individuals.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. We'd love to see the follow-up on that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Councilwoman Lewis,
back in. Thank you so much. Sheriff Diggins, you mentioned that you all had to increase your budget for the impound of RVs. What was that amount? The increase is, or maybe I'll ask you, Justin, is that on page 669?
So right now, there is budget in the Department of Public Health and Environment. Uh-huh. And so we're working with the Sheriff's Department, with DDPHE, with General Services, which in some cases can auction off RVs or vehicles that are abandoned, to put that program in best alignment with the vehicle impound facility and the work that's happening. The thinking in putting budget previously in the Department of Public Health and Environment was there might be some hazardous chemicals mm-hmm. in these RVs that were being picked up from the public right-of-way. Mm-hmm. I think based on a couple of years of piloting that, we're finding that that's mostly not the case. Okay. And so are looking at potentially moving that budget from Public Health and Environment to the Sheriff's Department and continuing conversations with the sheriff and those other agencies that are stakeholders in that.
Okay, thank you. And this is more specifically for the mayor, because what's the amount?
So the amount that's right now in the DDPHE budget that would shift is about $500,000.
Okay, because we I think when we got a briefing from whoever, maybe host, I think for the RV parking or maybe a study, the allocation was $250K. So it might be a better use of the dollars. I mean, I'm not trying to take no money from you, not intentionally anyways, but we might think about putting those dollars to the studying or the execution of the RV parking because it is needed, you know? So just a thought.
And the sheriff's team is very closely in collaboration with us around all the RV parking opportunities, enforcement, or support. So that's could be a good chance to collaborate. So it's a good recommendation.
Yeah, thanks. And maybe bring host into it. I'm not telling nobody how to do their job. I'm just making sure we get all the right parties to the table. Thank you so much.
All right. Last but not least, Councilwoman Sawyer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And this is not specific to the Sheriff's Department, although you guys know I think you are amazing and we are grateful for everything that you do. I just want to say, as we kind of round out budget hearings here, this budget is difficult. It's the hardest budget I've ever seen in my 5 years here. What is so extraordinary to me is that we have sat here all week long listening to staff members tell us how they are going to do more with less. And it's so incredible and so inspiring to hear agency after agency after agency come through and say, we know we need to give in some places, and we know this is a tough year, and we are going to continue to do what we do, and in fact, we are going to do more with less. And I just wanted to acknowledge that as we come to a close here, because it's really incredible. So, to you and to all of the city staff, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well said.
Well, I want to thank everybody for hanging in there today with this marathon day. We did it. Yay, we did it. I'm going to pass it over to the mayor to close us out.
Councilman Sawyer said it better than I can, so I think that was very powerful. Thank you for doing it. And that was exactly the disposition the agents guys took. It was like they just showed up and said, let's figure it out. And I've been so impressed and grateful for them on every stage. And so thank you, Sheriff, and thank you to the whole team. I do want to extend a thank you to a number of other folks that also helped pull this week together, including all the operations for the budget. Obviously, Tim Hoffman, there's Tim. Thank you so much with Angela's team. Beth, I don't know where Beth is and wherever Beth made all this week one smoothly, and Carolina as well, who is somewhere coming for us. I was right there. Thank you so much. So they did all of the operations, logistics preparation to make sure all this went smoothly and was a great experience. So huge thanks to all the team.
Finally wrap up, I want to make sure Council President Sandoval, was there anything you want to say since this was our budget briefing for Council, if there is anything you wanted to add?
Just want to say thank you, Mayor, to your staff and to everyone. So our process now looks like, with just so that you all are aware and the public is aware, we have our budget recommendation workshop on October 10th all day, and so we'll look at that. It's coming from like recommendations. It's not amendment process for my colleagues who are newer to the process. It's recommending what you would like to see in the proposed budget that comes forward, and then a public hearing on that, and then amendment process. And the final vote for it is November 12th, right after Veterans Day. So it's still, we have still a long process ahead of us. And just want to say thank you to all the departments. I continually hear that we're doing more with less, and I think all of us are. I think we're feeling it on City Council. I know you're feeling it, Mayor. But like I said at the State of the Union, one of my favorite sayings is that if you find joy in work, it doesn't really feel like work. And even though this week has felt like a lot of work, I always say it's death by PowerPoint is my terminology. But there is joy in it. We're giving back to the people. And honestly, you have to really want to give back and serve the people to be in these positions. And so ultimately, at the end of the day, as I head out on the Friday, I'll find joy in this week. And I'll find joy, even though it's, to your point, Councilman Sawyer, it's a hard budget. We're giving back. And so it, for me, after having gone through a life-changing event of almost dying and living in a being in a coma, I've had to really look at this in my leadership work that I'm doing at my master's program right now. And my purpose in life is to give back. And that gives me joy. And so hopefully every single person in this room, we are rooting for the people. And so let's just remember this as we go into the rest of the year. And let's just remember this as we go into the election cycle. And let's try to just come with compassion, and let's come with honesty, and let's listen, and let's just be open as we go into this new election month and as we vote on this really challenging budget that will set us up for 2025. So thank you all for a long week, a great week, and filling me with joy. Thank you.